Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. As we stagger past the shock and dismay of this presidential election, it's important that we understand what we must do as individuals and as a community to counter the forces that have been unleashed by the election of Donald Trump. To help us navigate these difficult waters, we'll talk this morning with longtime human rights activist Kathleen Sadat about how we confront the misogyny, racism, and thuggery that have been normalized during the election season. And how do we find a way to address the valid concerns that also underline the reason for Trump's appeal to so many people in this country? Kathleen, welcome back to Locus Focus.
Good morning, Barbara. Thank you for having me.
Actually, it's been a long time since you've been on the show. I think it was before it became a specifically environmental show. But today we're talking about a wider environment than just the natural environment. Well, when we started talking about doing this show, I think both of us expected that Hillary Clinton would be
right.
The nominee, and we were concerned about the country being really divided because we were expecting a close election and that there were a lot of angry people. Well, there's probably even more angry people, like maybe an entire country now that's really angry, and some of them are angry because of Trump's election, and they fear for their lives in some case and fear for the life of the planet. But the people who voted for Trump, I think, are probably just as angry still, as we're seeing in all kinds of outbursts, racist outbursts and really uncanny attacks around the country. So how do we reconcile the vision that we had when we planned this show and we're facing now?
Well, I don't think that I would change any of the instruments that we need to look at in order to make things better or different. The anger, I believe, covers fear. I believe fear is at the root of most of the anger. And so we need to be able to talk with other people about what we collectively are afraid of. And I think we're afraid of different things, but I think that we have to talk about values, what we want for this country, with people that we don't ordinarily talk to. Otherwise, we leave ourselves in that divided place. Many of us are feeling betrayed. Our country has betrayed us. The other people in the country, whoever they were that voted for Trump, we feel like we've been betrayed by those people, some of us. I think the Trump people are going to feel betrayed by Trump eventually, because I don't think they realize how much of what he said he could do, he was going to be able to do, in the way that they thought he would be able to do it. One of the things it points out to me is that we all need to be pressing to have civics as a mandatory class in every school, every high school in this country, and that high school graduation is not possible without completing that course and passing it. This speaks to the sense that I get of people that they thought they were electing a king or a queen who could just walk in and by pronouncement change a lot of things. So he's already been in office. I mean, he's not even in office, and he's discovered that he can't just walk in and get rid of Obamacare and then replace it with something. There are a lot of things that have to do with how it was structured and how we are structured. And I would say to you, as long as we have for-profit insurance companies, we will have this struggle.
Well, I think one of the things that's maybe helped me to reconcile this reality that we have woken up into is looking at the problems that I personally was willing to just kind of paper over by voting for Hillary Clinton. And actually, we were saying a lot in the last month, it's better to have the status quo than to have a madman be president.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess what this election has made me realize is that the status quo is not tenable anymore either. That, and particularly around Obamacare, thinking about why that is an unsatisfactory method of delivering health care to everybody. Not that I think what Trump's plan is going to be, whatever it is going to be any better. But the idea that, what this is giving us a very painful opportunity to do is to look at all the inadequacies, the inequities, the hypocrisies of what we were accepting as sort of a semi-progressive leaning maybe direction the country was going in that was still controlled by elites. And this is giving us the opportunity to look at what the actual agenda of those elites are and how far it is from the needs of people, particularly the people who voted for Trump, who are feeling so disenfranchised.
Well, I think it is time. I think it's past time. You know, I've been involved with various groups over time. And what I found on the left is an inability to talk with people who are not leftists. So now's the time, folks. Got to change that. There are people that we don't listen to because we label them. And I hear it now. They're stupid. They aren't smart. They're just those people. And they just believe that, well, yeah, okay. So how are you going to work with them? And you walk in the room calling them stupid, it guarantees you're not going to be able to work with them. But if you choose not to work with them, what are the consequences? And the consequences are what we see. This is the beginning of the consequences, what we see right now. This isn't even the apex. This isn't even the middle of it. This is the beginning. I looked at the Southern Law Poverty Center's page yesterday. They had 202 or 201 cases of people who have been somehow harassed or attacked racially, religiously, sexual orientation, just since Election Day. We've seen what's been going on here in Portland. People are hurt. They are angry. But what we're not doing, or we haven't figured out what to do, how to do yet, is sit down and talk with people that we don't ordinarily talk with. We say we're for the right, and we say we're all for all people. We want everybody at the table. Well, time to put another chair at the table.
Though I think about some of the real difficulties. From my own personal experience with this is I'm on a radio producer's listserv. And on Wednesday, somebody posted about last night and how, you know, coming together and supporting each other as producers and what, looking at what our role needs to be in the coming Trump administration in terms of hopefully telling stories that need to be told and standing up for the concept, the beliefs that we really believe need to be followed through on. And this guy, who I'd never seen on the list before, posted a thing saying, well, why do you assume that everybody on this list is a Democrat and that right. you're all mourning? Right. And, you know, now you're feeling the way I felt for the last two election cycles. And then he made a couple comments that at the end of his thing that made me a little uncomfortable. But I decided to read through this whole thing because I realized I never really paid close attention to what Trump people mm-hmm. felt. So he posted a couple other things. People responded to him. Some people were actually very cowed by it. Some other people were talking about some of the real concerns they had about Trump, but not denying this guy should have a place on the listserv. Then two interesting things. One person posted, he said, well, I looked at your profile and it says that you live in the Russian Federation. How did you vote? Did you vote absentee? So the guy just puts back, I voted absentee. Then a woman on the listserv posts, she said, I did some research and I found a link to your podcast. And here's the link for people to look at and judge for themselves, basically. And then she had a comment. She says, free speech is a wonderful thing. No. So I went and looked at the link, and it was the most horrible, racist, misogynist, mm-hmm. Islamophobic, homophobic, just horrible screed. It was not the kind of slightly even-handed pronouncement of, fair exchange of ideas that he had been promoting. And so it made me feel like this is another example of that while on the one hand, there's a lot of people, I think, who voted for Trump who probably don't share those feelings, that there's a lot of people who did.
That's not who you talk to.
But the problem is when you unmask them, then what do you do at that point?
What do you mean, what do you do?
Well,
when you unmask them, there they are.
And then how do you continue a conversation or you decide that you're...
Maybe you don't try to talk with that person. What I'm suggesting is that you talk with people who want to talk with you. You can't convince anybody who doesn't want to talk with you to talk with you. You can't get a reasonable, rational conversation out of it. But there are good people in our country who want this country to be a good place for all of us to live. Let's talk with them. We haven't looked for them. We haven't tried. We identify that one who is the virulent racist, attack that person, and we don't even do it with a consciousness of educating the person between us and them about what it is we mean. We use the jargon. We do the deep analysis, which all of which may be true, but if you can't apply it in any way, it's not even relevant. So I'm saying there are people that I know that supported us in ballot measure 9, against ballot measure 9, all over this state. I wonder if some of us could go and talk to those people and say, tell us what's going on in your community. What are the values that we're missing? What are we missing here? And that we shut up and listen.
Well, it's interesting to go back to ballot measure 9, which in 92, for those of you listening who weren't around then, which was an incredibly divisive period in Oregon's history. And I think that there were some people, I know you, Kathleen, debated Lon Mabon, and I spent a lot of time actually talking to Lon Mabon. I interviewed him 4 times, but kind of undercover, unlike you who were sitting there as his opponent. And I think a lot of people really didn't want to know why they thought that way. I spent like several years trying to understand how the religious right actually thought and tried to get a sense. And I actually had this one conversation with Lon Mabon where I think he started explaining things to me, talking about being in Vietnam and just how it really messed him up. And I think since then I've kind of backed away from having those conversations and because they were really exhausting too. But how do we find those people and how do we actually start to engage
them.
Now?
You ask them. You go to, you've got human dignity groups all around the state. You've got churches around the state. You have an organization around the state who say they stand for human rights. You start working with those places and say, how do we get this conversation going? This is not new. People have been doing it off and on for years and years and years, even during ballot measure 9. I went to Klamath Falls. And sitting next to Lon Mabon, the one thing I knew about Lon Mabon is that he believed in what he was doing just as strongly as I believed in what I was doing. I never denigrated him. I never accused him of being just in it for the money. I never said he was stupid. He was smart enough to get us all of our butts running. So I think we ourselves need to look at ourselves. When we say we want everybody at the table, do we really mean that? And if we don't, let's say it.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning with Kathleen Sadat, who, and Kathleen Stevenson is...
She's cool, too.
She's very cool. Well, we won't forget her for a very long time. But Kathleen Sadat is a longtime human rights activist, as she's been referring back to the Measure 9 campaign in 92, very much involved in protecting rights for lesbians and gays, but she's also been involved with protecting rights for just about everybody in this state and around the country whose rights are always being challenged. And we're talking this morning about kind of looking back at what's happened in the last week since the election and probably what led up to that election result and how we as people who we hope are of good spirit can figure out how to include the rest of the world in our worldview.
I want to say something. You know, Maya Angelou says you can't do anything else if you don't have courage. You can't love. You can't change the world. You can't ensure justice if you don't have courage. And what I think is that this is really, really, really scary for all of us. And what courage is acting in spite of the fear. It is not waiting for the fear to go away. It's acting in spite of the fear. I am fighting the paranoia that is about to envelop me as a consequence of this election. And I think it's important to fight it because I want to come out clear-headed and thinking clearly about what it is, what role I play, and what it is I think will be helpful. At the same time, I need to talk with other people. And I need to talk with the people that I've been working with off and on for the last 40 years. And I need to talk with people I've never worked with. Because I need to think about this and then be able to do something that is relevant. I'm not talking about writing another paper or being on Facebook. I'm talking about going up to somebody and saying, hi, would you talk to me? I want to hear what you have to say. And listening, not arguing. You know, the left has a history of sort of, we do the analysis, we print it up, and we say, here's the analysis, follow us. Time to change it.
Well, one of the things that I've been really aware of for the last week is I feel there's been a softening on the part of a lot of people, including myself. I mean, I feel like we've been, as you go, when you're in grief, which I think a lot of us are, you do soften and your heart opens. And to me, that's the big gift of this. And I noticed yesterday I was taking my daily walk in Oaks Bottom with my dog, and almost everybody that I passed, we looked in each other's eyes and we smiled and said hello. Mm-hmm. I mean, I often say hello to people on the trail, but this time it was almost everybody. And not only that, I had a bunch of conversations. And the last and they were about my dog or they were about other things. The last conversation I had, I was on my way out and this woman stopped me to ask me where the dog park and beach was because she'd heard about it. And we talked about that for a few moments and talked about how beautiful this place was. And then she said, I'm still processing the election. Because mm-hmm. I had been thinking about bringing it up with everybody else I talked to, but I thought, I'm not going to go there quite yet. And it seemed like, I guess I needed to build it myself to this moment. And then I was open enough that she responded, and we had a wonderful conversation about that. And the first thing that she said is, we need to work locally. Mm-hmm. And that was my response, actually, when we had our conversation 2 months ago about what we're going to do if Trump was elected. And that was what I thought then. And that's basically what I'm hearing just about everybody say. We're fortunate to live in a place where there's an awful lot that you can do locally. And at the end of the show, I'm going to be announcing a couple things people can do. But I think that the first step is this openness and this willingness to really meet with people who, and to support each other before we go out and we reach out to the people who scare us. That I think that we need to open up in a way to each other in ways that we maybe haven't been that open before.
All right, let's don't get caught in the trap of we have to solve the issue of this before we solve the issue of that. We can do a lot of stuff all at the same time. And when you talk about us opening up to one another, well, okay, so then really the local piece starts, the most local piece is me. I got to start there. And again, that's where the courage starts. And I see, I've been invited to gatherings. People are coming together. They are hurting. They need to talk. They need to be reassured that people are there for them. Yes, we can do that. At the same time, we need to be planning for what we're going to do on a broader scale. And we need to be holding accountable those people that we have elected into office. Now, I would like to see the Oregon congressional delegation, every one of them, regardless of whether they're Republican or Democrat, I want them to call a press conference. And I want them to say, this is a change. It is not what you expected, but this is what we want to reassure you of. Every person, regardless of race, religion, sexual orientation, is in our mind. We will fight against it. Just what Elizabeth Warren did the other day. We will fight against the oppression of any person or any group of people. I want our delegation to do that. And there's no reason why we can't ask for that. There is no reason. It takes you 10 minutes to sit down and write an email to your delegation. Write them all.
Have you done that yet?
Not yet. It's on the list. But I think we don't need to limit ourselves. Use your imagination. You're bigger than you have been. We are bigger than we have been behaving. We are much broader. We are much deeper than we have been behaving. We have been in our little bubbles now talking to ourselves, and boom, somebody just popped that bubble. We need to pay attention, and we need to not go back into that bubble by limiting ourselves, by saying, well, we can't do that till we can. Yes, we can. We can do it all.
Well, actually, I mean, I've had a lot of conversations with people who are in various stages of processing this. I want to do a shout out to Eugene Rashad, who did a wonderful show Saturday, which kept me going. And my partner and I were cooking dinner for some friends that night, and we're just having a hard time. I've been crying all day, and Eugene's show was just beautiful. I called him to tell him he was doing really important work that day in the show. And he was telling me how hard a time he was having coming out of his cocoon. And it's interesting to me that that's the way he was feeling personally, but what he was doing was helping us all to come together. And I think that that's what we do have to understand, that people are taking the process. They have to go through their own process. But I found myself the last couple of days that I realized that how physically sick I was feeling and all the things were getting in the way and not sleeping. I had to stop that. I had to find a way so that I could start functioning. And I've gotten myself into these little tasks that I've been doing, research or whatever, and I emailed Jeff Merkley yesterday and did some stuff where every time I do something, it gets me to that point where you start to feel like you're on maybe the verge of finding your courage. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think that that's part of it, but it's some people are going to have to take a little bit longer maybe to come out.
I'm not condemning anybody. I'm not requiring anything of anybody. I'm saying do the best you can where you are with what you got.
Well, I was at a 350.org gathering on Friday night, and there was a webinar that the program was focused around with a bunch of really exciting young activists, and then good old Bill McKibben and Annie Leonard, who is now the executive director of Greenpeace. And what I was really impressed by both Annie Leonard and Bill McKibben, because they were the only two, quote, environmental activists on the panel, and the rest were people working with immigrant rights. And there were two African-American women who, one young, one kind of early middle age, who were coming from a very different perspective than what you usually encounter in an environmental organization. But both Bill McKibben and Annie Leonard said, you know, all, for all the fears that we have for what is going to happen to the environment under Donald Trump, our first act as environmental activists is to support the most vulnerable, and that's the immigrants. Yeah. And Bill McKibben, he was so humble. It was just amazing to see that guy be so humble and so quiet and so respectful of the young activists. And then his final words is, we have to be kind. Mm-hmm. So I feel that that to me was a really major shift in watching a national leader take a stand like that.
I think it's good. What I don't want us to do is to begin to do what we usually do, which is rank order oppression. Immigrants are at risk, at higher risk than they were 2 or 3 weeks ago. Black people have been at risk before that. American Indians are in Dakota risking their lives with the slogan, water is life. We don't have to rank order anybody. We just need to be kind to all the people around us. We don't have to. We can design a strategic approach to an issue or a cause, and that may involve a particular group. But the whole thing is, what is our definition of love? What is our definition of love? And for me, it's to be connected. It's not to be in love with. It's not to be burdened by. It is to be connected. And if I am connected, then it doesn't matter whether you're the immigrant or the American Indian in North Dakota. I am connected to you, and I will give you what I can. I will do what I can with what I've got where I am.
Well, I think that a lot of what we're seeing now, getting back to the local piece, I mean, there's a bunch of different events that are happening this week, which I'll be talking about at the end of the show, but that there's a place where whatever we do now, I mean, the event, for instance, tomorrow to support Standing Rock Sioux and mm-hmm. say no to the Dakota Access Pipeline, and that's going to be at 4 o'clock at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers headquarters, 333 Southwest 1st, and I'll mention that again at the end of the show. I mean, that event's been planned for a long time. It takes on a new light in light of what's happening. The five people who turned off the valves to the tar sands and stopped the oil flowing a couple weeks ago, they're going to be speaking Wednesday night. That event was planned before the election. It takes on a new light. I think mm-hmm. everything that we mm-hmm. do now takes on a new light.
What's that new light that you see?
I think it is a combination of urgency, and it's a combination of this awareness when, as you said in the beginning, I mean, the election of Trump is an indication of how out of touch we who opposed him and we who think that we believe in what's right and good, that we are, how much out of touch we are with a strong force in America. And I see two parts to that force. One part of that force are people who are just frustrated and angry and feeling left out and just wanted to vote for change. And then there's another force, which is the force that is writing racist, homophobic, anti-Semitic graffiti in the bathroom of the Reed College Library this mm-hmm. weekend. Mm-hmm. Or I heard, and this really was startling, a friend of mine talked about a kid who was harassed by another kid at the Waldorf School in Milwaukee, the Waldorf School of all places, and told that they should leave this country. They're not allowed here anymore. And those things are happening in schools all around the country.
Right.
So we know that there's some pretty angry parents who have some rather disconcerting beliefs that they're passing on to their kids. So that's the other part of what I think we're recognizing we're up against.
I think that what Donald Trump has done for us is he has increased the potential for us to unify across our individual identity groups. Now that's the light I see. I see the light that says when somebody is standing on the stage talking about issue number one, there are now people in the audience who would not have paid attention before this. But now we are beginning to see how these things are connected and that we need one another to be effective.
And that's what I saw with Bill McKibben and Annie Leonard, that they were basically saying, mm-hmm. okay, I've been identified with the environmental movement all my working life. My work in the environmental movement is intimately connected with fighting racism, with protecting immigrants, with perfecting the rights of lesbian and gay and bisexual and transgendered people, that this is, that all these concerns are in common. And that's what we're seeing in the streets, too, which right. is actually, let's get to what's going on in the streets. I'm just wondering, what's your take on these protests?
I'm glad that the young people are there. I am so happy. And if I were not so old, I'd probably go down and join them. I am in a place where I want to just go, go, Cameron, go, guys, just do it, and do it right. And if you need something, come and ask me, and I'll see if I can help. So I'm enthusiastic about that. Now, there's a demonstration, and then there's something else we have to do. So what do we do with the young people, or the not just young people, but the people who are in the streets? What do we do? How do we work with them? What is the next thing from that? There has to be a spectrum from the demonstration to some kind of action. I did love the list of things I heard that they wanted from the city council. And I don't remember what the list is now, but I went, yes, you have to have something that you want. You have to have something for people to respond to. Now, how do we get behind that with them? How do we help them do that thing? So there has to be some place where we talk with them or they talk with some other folks. It cannot be in isolation. Tactics without some tie to broader program are just simply tactics, and they don't move things in the direction that we want. So there have to be connections all along the way. This is why I'm saying, yes, yell at your federal delegation, yell at your elected officials for the city and for the county, insist upon something, ask for something. Right now, I'm just asking them all to speak out in favor of and in support. I don't want to hear about anti-racism. I want to hear about what you're for in terms of race. I want to hear about equality. I want to hear about equity. I want to hear about resources that go to promote those ideas.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning with Kathleen Sadat, who is a longtime community activist and human rights activist. And we're talking about ways we can move forward beyond the election, what the lessons are that are going to help us to organize to really create a better world. One thing that I can't stop thinking about, and this is almost goes in a different direction. I mean, as we're talking about sort of accepting this reality and moving with it, but there's part of me that doesn't really want to accept the reality because I think there have been so many irregularities that got us to it. And
you mean the reality of Trump as president?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what I'm talking about is that there were a number of reports last week about how the Trump campaign had regular contact with Russian officials at the Russian embassy in Washington, D.C., and I found some articles yesterday. This is one of the places where I kind of went nuts researching late at night. I found a handful of articles talking about why isn't this the number one story. The articles were in Slate. They were in Esquire and in The Hill, the very nonpartisan mm-hmm. newspaper for Capitol Hill in D.C. And I thought they raised some really good points about what's going on and why this isn't happening. And my question is, if it were uncovered that there was some real collaboration between the Trump campaign and Russian officials, it seems to me that it really calls into question the legitimacy of this election.
Sure. And who is to call that into question? See, look, what you're looking at, as far as I can see, is we don't have a organized or legitimate, that's being in quotes, response to this dilemma. We have a system that, first of all, the popular vote is diminished in terms of its importance. And then when you get there, you have this person in place. So what if he's indicted on his university, Trump University stuff? We have never expected this. So that's part of what we need to be thinking about and part of what we need to be pushing our representatives on and getting our people to push other federal delegations. What will happen if that happens? What would happen? Who's going to bring it forth? Who's the legitimate body or entity? Is it the people? Do we go and take over the Capitol? Do we just take him out and put him on the sidewalk and say, now you're free to go home to Trump Tower? Or is there some other mechanism that hasn't been invented or that we don't know about? And so I think we have to educate ourselves on what would be the options. I don't know. The same conversation came up on Tuesday night, I was with a group of friends. What, do you think the Russians could have hacked our systems? Well, yeah, I do.
But actually, that one, I mean, it's possible, but I think that there's that you'd have to really go back proving. The other thing about there being collaboration between the Trump campaign and Russian delegates.
What would it be?
What?
What would it be?
What would what be?
The collaboration, what would it look like?
Well, it just that this Russian official has said that they had frequent meetings with the Trump campaign.
But the meetings have to have had some goal, some object. Meeting in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with.
So then you need to investigate that.
Right.
And I
okay.
think that's a little easier to investigate than whether the election results
were hacked. I
don't
know. We got some pretty good hackers out there, right? I mean, all I'm saying is, even if you find the information to be suspect or actually criminal, what do you do with it? Do you have to have the Republican Congress impeach the Republican president?
Well, my thought is that if some of the investigation about Trump's possible contacts and collaboration with Russians to get elected, if that were to be investigated before he's inaugurated, is a whole different ball of wax than if it happens after he's actually become president. Because you don't, I don't know, to me it throws a whole thing up in the air. I don't know what happens if you find that a president-elect has committed criminal acts that could perhaps, you know, border on
We already found that. He's already done things that border on criminal acts. It hasn't stopped him.
Yeah. But this one, it seemed to be like, you know, if he's collaborating with a foreign entity that's considered an enemy of the United States in many ways, that takes it to even a higher level. It takes it to a federal
level.
That
issue was raised during the campaign, his love of Putin. It didn't stop him. The man said, I can go out on Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and it's not going to stop me.
Well, I still think that it's important to push this Russian connection. I mean, I've been trying to figure out some way to get this covered by the news, at least.
I'm not saying it shouldn't be pushed. I'm just saying, and then what? And if we aren't prepared for what the then what is, then there's no point in pushing. Now, what else do we need to do if we push? And what is the plan if we don't find anything? What is the plan if we do find something? Who needs to be involved in making that go forward? There needs to be some thought here, not just simply, he met with these people and they talked about something we don't think they should have talked about. There's got to be more than that. There's got to be a plan for it. That's all. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying, just remember, it's not a matter of, it's not a matter of logic. What you're doing is logic. What's been happening is not logical from any perspective that I can look at it. What I'm looking at is the election of somebody where people are saying we want to stop globalization. Donald Trump is a spoke in the wheel of globalization. Okay, you want to have somebody who's gonna he's gonna say what he thinks. Well, don't you care what he thinks? It's just that he says what he thinks. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that he can talk about people the way that he does. Well, he says what he thinks. So there's a lot of incongruous stuff that's going on here. And to approach it strictly as though it's a rational process to get to some understanding, I think is a mistake.
Well, let's get back to how we talk to the people who supported Trump, who are possibly people that we can connect to. How do you propose going out and reaching these people?
Well, I think we ask the ROP to help us. I think we ask the Rural Organizing Project to help us. I think we ask Healthy Democracy folks to help us to make contact with people who want to talk with us. I'm not talking about talking to people who don't want to talk with us. And then we get our butts there. We don't ask them to come to the city. We go to where they are. And we sit down and we say, hey, this is important. This is our country. We live here on this planet together. Can we begin a process of talking about our values and how we can work together to see that those values are implemented? Back in ballot measure 9 days, I went to do a people of color talk, I think it was in Grants Pass. Room full of people. The last guy, Latino guy, said, I don't think I belong in this room. And I said, why not? He said, because I support the OCA. I said, please stay. He said, why? I said, because we live on this planet together and we've got to get along. He stayed. And at the end, he came over and he said, thank you for asking me to stay. I understand now. you guys aren't just about gay rights. You care about schools and kids and jobs and timber, and we've got to do that. We've got to do it.
So do you have any thoughts about in the next few weeks what you're going to be doing?
I am going to try to calm down. That's really important to me. I've been weepy. I've been scared. I've been angry. I want to get to a clearer place. And what's going to help me do that is talking with people that I know who've done this work for a long time. I'm reading a lot of what Scott Nakagawa is writing. And it's going to exercise my brain to respond to him or to have thoughts with that. The other thing is to start, get my renewed list of my elected officials up next to my computer so that I can start to send them emails or call or send them handwritten letters about what I think is going on. I think the other thing is to encourage the formation of coalitions of human beings. We cannot go down, you know, Black Lives Matter, and they ought to matter to women, and they ought to matter to the LGBTQ community, and vice versa, and all around. And we've got to get there. So anything I can do to help that, that's what I'm going to do.
Well, I'm going to mention a couple of things that people can do in the next couple of days to feel solidarity with your community here and solidarity with people fighting around the country for a number of things. First one is indigenous rights and protecting the waters, and I think protecting the world. And that's helping support the Standing Rock Sioux who are trying to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline. There's going to be a gathering tomorrow at 4 p.m. at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers headquarters, which is at 333 Southwest 1st Avenue in Portland. Police have taken shocking and inhumane measures against indigenous protectors in the Standing Rock as they peacefully defend their land and water. They've used tear gas, sound cannons, concussion grenades, armored vehicles, and rubber bullets. They've shot horses. They detain people in dog kennels and mark them with numbers on their bodies. We cannot stand for that. The Army Corps of Engineers, part of the Obama administration, has the power to approve or deny the final permit needed to complete the pipeline. That's why it's crucial the Army Corps of Engineers hear from us. If this permit doesn't go through, it could mean the end of the Dakota Access Pipeline. So we're asking people, this is a lot of groups are pulling together on this, and you can join this by coming to the Army Corps of Engineer building. Again, that's tomorrow at 4 p.m. at 333 Southwest 1st Avenue in downtown Portland. And then on Wednesday night, five tar sands protesters. There were five people who are being called the tar sands valve turners. On October 11th, they took climate action that does not appear on the agenda of most elected leaders. They stopped the flow of fossil fuel at five tar sands oil entry sites. It is illegal to attempt to rescue our special planet. So they are all up on charges now, but they're going to be in Portland. They're in Portland this week, and they'll be speaking to the community on Wednesday night starting at 7 o'clock at Sunnyside Community House at 3520 Southeast Yamhill Street. So those are two ways that you can join with community to stand up for our planet and to begin our agenda to counter the force of the Trump administration. Do you have any final thoughts, Kathleen?
Well, I don't know that I have anything that's really helpful at this point. I, like everyone else, I'm in shock and trying to avoid awe. What I do know is the thing that will hold us together is if we continue to care for one another. I want to say something about the safety pin campaign.
Right, yeah.
Do it.
What is the safety pin campaign?
The safety pin campaign is people wearing safety pins to give other people who may be marginalized groups the idea or the information that they're there to help support them. So if you're wearing a safety pin and something is starting to happen to me, I'm going to look to you to come and help intervene or say something or help get me out of there. But don't wear that safety pin unless you're willing to put your butt on the line. Just if you have doubts about it, keep it off, because I want to be able to rely on you.
I want to join you very much for thank you very much for joining us today, Kathleen.
Thank you for having me.
And it's a good way, I think, to start this new world that we're finding ourselves in. We've been talking with Portland human rights activist Kathleen Sadot, and you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locusfocus. Next week, we'll be talking about the need to protect our urban tree canopy in every neighborhood and the whole idea of equity, natural access equity for everybody and not just for wealthy neighborhoods. And we'll have environmental advocate Jim Labby and Portland State University Urban Studies and Planning Professor Vivek Chandas on. My engineer is Jenka Sonnenberg. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by the Neville Brothers. Thanks for listening.